information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. This is Up North News Radio. Here's Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. Happy Wednesday. Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio. It is May 17th, 2023, and coming up this hour, State Senate Democratic Leader Melissa Agard will talk about her grassroots tour of Wisconsin, making the case that prohibition didn't work for alcohol and it's not working for marijuana either. So we will hear from Senator Agard coming up at the bottom of this hour, and then we will wrap up the hour talking to Todd Alba of the conveniently named Todd Alba Show, heard next on many of these civic media radio stations. If you'd like to join us during the hour, 844-967-2789 is the phone number. You can also reach us, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Now, before we get to the interview that I taped yesterday with Senator Agard, we'll get you to current events in terms of the legislature and what's happening over in the assembly in another part of the state capitol, where today the assembly will convene and will vote on a Republican-authored plan that they like to advertise the first end of it, that it will increase state aid to local governments. State aid to local governments has been flat or declining for a generation now. And apparently they have heard, the Republicans in the legislature have heard enough local governments cry uncle and have said, okay, we will finally, you know, live up to our share of helping fund services around Wisconsin. But then there's the second half of the bill, and that's all the strings that are attached with increased state funding. And here's the thing. The bill isn't done yet. They're still working on it. People involved in the plan are still negotiating privately to try to reach agreement on what all it's going to say. And yet it's scheduled to be considered by the full assembly today and put up for a vote and then put it in the Senate. And if I learned anything from my time in the legislature, it's that people in the Senate and the assembly are not necessarily in lockstep, both Democrats and Republicans. They, all four of those caucuses, if you will, like their autonomy and don't like being dictated. And so it goes to show that Senate Republicans have not necessarily taken what Assembly Republicans have given them and vice versa and simply passed it as is. So if Assembly Republicans are still talking to Senate Republicans, if they're still talking to local officials around the state and trying to figure out what all is going into this thing, if I might bring up a point that I've brought up before and I'm going to bring up about 10 more times, maybe they could just sit down with Governor Evers and say, what can we agree on to increase funding to our local governments who are clamoring for the state to once again pay its fair share for services, and for Republicans in the legislature to frankly get over this attitude that the only thing to do with government is to shrink it, when there is more need than ever for good education, good health care, good roads, protecting our resources, everything else that state and local governments should be doing together. But instead, what we've got going on here is show business. It's all performative until at some point the Republican leadership of the legislature sits down with the Democratic governor, hopefully, and they decide what can be passed without necessitating veto threats, veto overrides, delayed budgets. The whole thing is a show that impresses nobody, except maybe some of their big donors who want them to do this little puppet dance for them. Perhaps instead, we could finally get a legislature that would take governing as seriously as it takes politics. But for now, these cash-strapped local governments are going to have to wait and see if the legislature will help them with police services, fire, emergency, pension costs, everything that is needed for you and I to enjoy a certain quality of life at the local level, and for the state to fund a share of it the way that it did for 100 years before making changes once Republicans took over the legislature after the 2010 election. It leads as well to another thing that Republicans messed up from 2011 onward that we'll talk about later this half hour, and that would be passenger rail. There is a new rail plan that has been put out by the State Department of Transportation. It's a rail plan designed to take the state, you know, into the next quarter century. And as we review it, it's simply worth noting that we could have been so much further along right now. Every time you're stuck in a traffic jam in the I-94 corridor near Milwaukee, every time you're in heavy traffic going through St. Croix County on your way to the Twin Cities, keep in mind that a lot of those bodies could have been on a rail car at this point, contributing less pollution, breaking up less of the asphalt, getting things done more efficiently, getting work done on these train cars instead of having to sit behind the wheel. The progress that could have been made here is stupefying, and we're still working on it. We're still working to get things done by 2050 that could have been done by 2020. We'll talk a bit more about that. And then later, Melissa Agard and later Todd Alba all join us. But coming up next, a little bit of sports, a new professional women's soccer team coming to Wisconsin. And we've got your full weatherology forecast for the rest of the week. That's all just ahead on this Wednesday morning here on Up North News Radio. We'll be back. We're back now on Up North News Radio, and I am joined by the Senate Democratic leader, Melissa Agard, who's going to be talking about marijuana legalization and a tour that she's doing around the state. We'll hit a couple of other matters in the legislature since the state budget is still very much a work in progress, and work I would even put in quotation marks given some of the things that are happening in the Joint Finance Committee. But again, we'll get into all that with Senator Agard. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Pat. It's great to be here.
Oh, we appreciate it so much. Now, you have started this tour around the state about a topic that we've discussed quite a bit here on the program, and that is how Wisconsin is missing out in terms of basically becoming an island when it comes to marijuana legalization, and that, you know, there are many different facets to look at this, either from a health standpoint, a public demand standpoint, but also from a fiscal standpoint. When you start each of these tours, and you've done Wauwatosa and Platteville, you've got Eau Claire and Wausau coming up. When you start each of these with your introductory remarks, what do you like to emphasize first?
Well, really, we know that prohibition did not work when it came to alcohol. It did not work in Wisconsin when it came to margarine, and it is not working when it comes to cannabis. And because of the fact that we are a prohibitionist state, we are less safe, we are less prosperous, and we are less free. And as Michigan and Illinois have legalized for responsible adult usage, and Minnesota is right on the knife's edge of being able to pass a bill with the governor holding a pen in his hand saying, bring it to me. We literally, as you mentioned, are an island of prohibition. And we also know that here in Wisconsin, even before Minnesota legalizes, that 50% of the adults over the age of 21 in Wisconsin live within 75 minutes of a legal dispensary. When I was driving up to Green Bay for the very first stop on my grassroots tour, I counted the billboards as I started entering the Fox River Valley. And for those of us that are true Wisconsinites, we know, you know, when you're getting to that neck of the woods because the billboards become fast and furious along the highway. They used to all be car dealerships, and now I would say about a third of them are cannabis billboards telling folks to keep driving to the UP where they can buy legal weed. And that's indicative of the challenges that we're facing as a state, because people are taking their hard-earned tax dollars and their valuable time to travel to other states to purchase legally regulated cannabis and then bringing it illegally back into Wisconsin. So that's really how we start the conversations, and you know, they are robust. people have lots of questions, but it is clear that Wisconsinites are ready, regardless of political flavor, and they're frustrated by the lack of inaction by the Republicans and the Wisconsin state legislature.
And that is something that I think needs to be emphasized repeatedly, that this is not some kind of a well out of the mainstream, fringe issue. This issue is one that survey after survey shows has bipartisan support still, correct?
That's right. We know that actually in Wisconsin, 2/3 of the people of the state of Wisconsin support responsible adult usage. Less than 10% are prohibitionists. And in fact, the majority of Republicans now in Wisconsin support full legalization of cannabis for responsible adult usage. And that trend line is continuing to go up. So the numbers are going to continue to rise. We keep a map in my office of the United States. And in that map, we have it color-coded for responsible adult usage, cannabis legislation, medicinal cannabis legislation, and prohibitionist states. And that map is getting greener and greener by the month. And there are less and less states with no color. Wisconsin is one of very few. And this is an example, yet another example, of many policies in Wisconsin where we are falling behind because my Republican colleagues are tone deaf to the will of the people across the state of Wisconsin. Folks aren't just picking, the legislators in the Capitol building are not just picking on this policy. I think a lot of people, when I go to these grassroots tours and meet with business owners and community leaders and thought leaders, they feel like, why not this? And the fact of the matter is there are a number of policies that my Republican colleagues are not moving forward on that are wildly popular with the people of the state of Wisconsin. And it's clear that the will of the people is not being represented by the current makeup of the legislature.
And because of that, because of Republicans not wanting to move forward on many different topic areas that have broad public support, this question might be a little unfair just speaking solely on legalized marijuana, but does Republican leadership give any kind of a reason? Is there any kind of political strategy or anything behind it? Or have they not really responded to the question of why they oppose something that 2/3 of their constituents want?
So, I think that every single one of them has a different answer as to why it's not moving forward. And the answer can change depending on the season for each individual person. If we knew what the concern was that their caucus had, we could address that with thoughtful legislation. Like I said, prohibition or the lack of legislation is not making our communities safer. That is, I think, one of the most basic tenets of government is to make sure that our communities are safe and that people can be prosperous and that we're honoring their freedoms and liberties. And because of the lack of inaction by my Republican colleagues, and I would say it's not even a lack of action, they're literally putting roadblocks up. We aren't able to cross that finish line. And that is really very frustrating for me because I'm a problem solver. I believe that if we sit down at the table and we can identify a problem, we can come up with solutions. And it might be difficult and it might take a while, but we can come up with those solutions. But when they continue to kind of change the mark, the reason why we are not able to even bring this bill forward for a public hearing in the Capitol building, it makes it really hard for us to move the ball forward. That's why, frankly, I am a strong believer in the fact that next year in 2024, we're going to have a real opportunity to change the faces of the legislature and make sure that the people who are here in the Capitol building are actually doing the work of their constituents and for their constituents.
We're talking with State Senator Melissa Agard, the Senate Democratic leader here on Up North News Radio, about her grassroots tour, about the current landscape of cannabis policy in Wisconsin. The tour includes stops in Eau Claire on May 25th at the Ellie Phillips Public Library, and then June 1st in Wausau at the Marathon County Public Library. In both cases, runs from 4:30 to 5:30. Senator, we talked about the remarks made in joint finance by one of the co-chairs, Assembly Representative Mark Bourne, who was quite dismissive to the point of arrogance about how, well, the Democratic agenda must be just to spend money and smoke weed. And they talked about how, nobody's asking them to do this. I happen to think that means they're living, you know, in their own partisan bubble, and that, well, we know about two-thirds support statewide. Do you feel like if we went into to these, you know, red districts, and I know public opinion surveys aren't don't come cheap, but if you went into some of these Republican-led districts, do you feel like you would see similar numbers of public support for legalized marijuana?
I know by fact that the majority of Republicans in Wisconsin support responsible adult usage and support government honoring their freedoms and liberties. They support making sure that Wisconsin is a safer place and is a place where small businesses and main streets can thrive. And because the Republicans in the Capitol building appear to be suffering from reefer madness and misinformation, we're not able to march forward. And that is really frustrating. If we were able to bring this bill to the floor in both houses right now, I'm confident it would pass. But it's because of the message of leadership that this is not a priority of theirs, that it is not moving forward. Governor Evers would sign it. He has really grown in his position when it comes to cannabis policy in Wisconsin. And President Biden has really grown when it comes to cannabis policy at the national level. It's not a matter of if this is going to happen. It's going to matter of when it's going to happen and if it's going to be a state's rights policy or a national policy.
What would be the fiscal impact, generally speaking, in Wisconsin? What are we missing out on when people go to Michigan, Illinois, eventually to Minnesota? And is that something that Democrats in the legislature or the governor have already said could be applied to a specific part of the budget? Or are we just talking about general revenue? What do you tell folks on this grassroots tour about the fiscal implications?
Well, certainly the fiscal implications are important. And, you know, my understanding is the Republican Party wants to be the fiscal watchdogs for the state of Wisconsin. So the fact that they are holding up quite frankly, $160, $200 million of tax revenue to the state of Wisconsin. That's not counting the fiscal benefits, the robust fiscal benefits that could be attached to business owners, saved by local governments, money saved through the criminal justice system. This does have real impacts on the state of Wisconsin. We know that the state of Illinois is earning tens of millions of dollars off of people in Wisconsin who are driving over there, that is going to their tax base. And very similar numbers are probably in Michigan and will be in Minnesota. We also know that it's important for us to realize this isn't just a fiscal issue here, that it is a moral issue, and that our communities will be more safe with regulation and licensing. And because we aren't having these conversations, Wisconsin is less safe. They are causing our state to be more dangerous for our kids and our communities.
In the couple of minutes we have left, let's talk a bit about the state budget process that is in the Joint Finance Committee right now, of course, dominated by Republicans. And one of the very first things they did in that committee was strip out more than 500 different proposals that Governor Tony Evers put in his plan. We've obviously covered some. You can't possibly hit them all. But from your standpoint as Senate Democratic leader, what have you either received the most feedback on, or what do you see as some of the most damaging items that were struck out?
Yeah, so I mean, the list is long, right? Over 500 provisions thrown out. But we know, based on the joint finance hearings around the state, as well as contacts that people made directly to their legislators, that funding our public schools, addressing the childcare crisis in the state of Wisconsin, and protecting our environment are paramount to be able to move forward. We are losing our kids. We're exporting them to other states at really large rates. That's not something that we should be proud of. And we're having a really hard time recruiting people to come to the state of Wisconsin. If we can't get this right, we are not going to be able to fix our employment crisis, the lack of employees for the number of jobs that we have in the state of Wisconsin. We need to make sure our schools are funded, that our environment is protected, and that we have safe places for our babies to be able to go so people can go.
And then our last subject will just be on something I mentioned earlier this morning, a brand new Republican-sponsored bill that is supposedly meant to address PFAS, but it certainly reads to me like a laundry list of mandates that they're putting on the Department of Natural Resources and does not appear to be actually holding responsible the people who have been contaminating the water. Now, I know the bill, you know, just came out. You haven't had a chance to review it very much yet, but let me ask it under the frame of whether you have any optimism that the Republican majority will do anything seriously to increase the way that we address, clean up, and prevent future PFAS contamination.
You know, water is life, as far as I'm concerned, and whether it's PFAS or lead, contaminated groundwater, we know that we need to do better here in the state of Wisconsin. And it is clear that the Republicans understand that something needs to happen here, but they are not solving the problem for the ordinary people. In fact, over and over again, it feels as if they are putting shields up for corporations to not be held accountable and not providing real relief for our local governments and for our families. We need to do this in a comprehensive way. And if there are not real dollars attached to this, and there are not real teeth in holding people accountable and preventing continued PFAS contamination in Wisconsin, we're not doing right for our friends and neighbors across the state.
State Senator Melissa Agard, Senate Democratic leader, whose grassroots tour will be stopping in Eau Claire May 25th and Wausau on June 1st. Thanks so much for your time. We appreciate you spending a little bit with us today.
Thank you.
And we will be back with Todd Alba from the conveniently named Todd Alba Show next. You're up north.
Just have another drink. Oh, the same. We got the lawn. Just put mine in the boot.
It's really something for a control freak like me to give up control of anything, but sometimes I do for the bumper music that Mr. Zommers will pick out for Todd Alba.
Yeah.
What do we have now? Because it's usually quite passive aggressive. What have you got this time, Eric?
Oh, it's not this time. It's just Salvadoreña by Los Hermanos Flores. Just some cumbia, some Salvadoran cumbia, something that Todd enjoys.
Todd, I did not enjoy you. You like this?
Well, like much like I never lived in Central America. Like you lived in the Caribbean for what, 2 or 3 years at one point?
3 years, yeah.
3 years. I've made 39 treks over 25 plus years to El Salvador, and
really,
so, yeah, it's kind of like a second home to me. And it started with our foreign exchange student in college, and then just became a passionate place to go. And that's how I got into coffee, meeting all these coffee farmers and sourcing coffee directly from the farms in El Salvador. So, yeah, so I've really learned to enjoy Central America and El Salvador in particular. And so cumbias are huge. And so we were talking about this whole border issue on Monday when we did the show from Richland Center down at WRCE. And so, Mistress, I mentioned that, you know, if you just, like we've talked about on your show, Pat, and other places, it doesn't matter whether it's El Salvador or whether it's up north or whether it's in an urban area in Wisconsin. If you just sit and have a beverage and listen to the music and enjoy an evening with someone, it turns out we're all pretty much alike, you know. And so we use some of that music, and thus Mr. Zommers dialed it up.
That was great. And yes, I could not agree more that if more people could get out of their bubbles and realize that, you know, people that they either look down on or they eye with suspicion are just like any of our other neighbors. If you could just have coffee with them or have a beer, you'd be able to see the problems and anxieties that they have, and they could see the same in you. Now, El Salvador really catches my attention because when we talk about the migrants at the southern border and folks who don't look into the issue, rather simplistically think it's nothing but Mexicans. But in fact, there's a lot of folks from Central America, even South America, Venezuela, that are trying to make their way up. El Salvador is really high up on that list because things are not well there with the government and the economy, that at least from what I see as a news consumer. So you, as somebody with a better connection, can maybe talk a bit more about that.
Well, I appreciate you bringing it up. It is a passion of mine, and it's super interesting. And we probably don't have time to go into the whole thing deeply today, but kind of the 30,000 foot level is, you're right. I mean, there was a civil war there that killed over 75,000 people in the late 80s and early 90s. First time I went there, interestingly, was we landed 4 days or 3 days before they signed the peace accords in 92. And now, the last time I was there, this is the longest I've gone because of the pandemic, 4 years since I've been there last. It's a very different country. And certainly democracy has taken hold there. However, the latest guy to be, or latest person to be elected president, I believe going on 3 years ago, was Nayib Bukele, a U.S. educated guy in his late 30s when he got elected president, right around 40 now. And he's kind of taken this authoritarian Trump approach. He's very popular. He wears a leather jacket, a baseball cap. He's young. He's hip. He says, I'm not going to do things. He uses Twitter all the time, just like Trump, kind of a Trump acolyte, but he's cool about it. And the thing that Bukele has done is he's invested money and made life for average Salvadorans much better. Infrastructure's better. Completely forgetting human rights, but locked up all these gang members, and now you just say, well, this person's a gang member, they get locked up, no way to, you know, no process for it. But things have gotten better, and thus, to your point, Pat, sorry to finally get around to it, is that now with this newest push of migration north, Salvadorans are one of the lowest people in this new batch because things have improved. And what we talked about Monday, and you might be able to speak about this in the Caribbean, not quite the same thing, but most people, given the choice, hey, do you want to go live in the U.S. or stay in your home country? Most people say, you know, I love my country. It's just that because of gangs, poverty, jobs, threats, and abuse to women, they want to come to the U.S. And so it's a very interesting topic, and I appreciate you giving me the chance to talk about it.
Well, and it also brings up some of the balances, the balancing acts that any society has to do. One man's charismatic leadership could be another man's authoritarianism.
Right, right.
One man's law and order could be, you know, another man's police state. And that, you know, there's no clear line of distinction as to when that somebody has crossed over. That's for each electorate to decide, but it's also for each economy to decide. And people do vote with their feet mm-hmm. as well as with their ballots. And so it's encouraging to hear that after all those years of civil war and strife, that there is at least a form of democracy that is taking root. But democracy, as we know, is so slow and messy, even although it's the best system to get capitalism started rather than, you know, a state-sponsored economy, takes a while. And that mm-hmm. means people are going to continue to emigrate for a while before things stabilize out there. But I certainly hope things go well, and I really appreciate your insight on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you might have heard El Salvador is the first country to also include now Bitcoin as part of their national currency. So El Salvador, their national currency is the U.S. dollar and Bitcoin. And there was a really interesting 60 Minutes story a few months back. If you dial it up, it's a gamble. It's a gamble. But so far,
yes, it is.
But so far, Nayib is, he has like a 90% approval rating right now in El Salvador. It's ridiculous.
Okay. All right. While we're on the subject of other countries, we've turned into the global report here on Up North News Radio.
Yes.
Aaron pointed out that a caller mentioned, we were talking earlier about Denmark, Wisconsin, and all these other places. Wanted to mention one of the things I missed in the history lesson, but I went back and confirmed that this is the day that the Constitution of Norway was signed, officially separating from Denmark. Now, not Denmark, Wisconsin. This is actually Denmark, right. The country. But that they're because I didn't know if anybody had ever actually assembled, you know, like the definitive list of all the place names in Wisconsin that are named after other places, you know, your New Londons, New Berlins, right. and things like that. So we just thought that was interesting. So we've talked about Norway and Denmark today. Yeah. We've talked about El Salvador. This is great.
And little old Wisconsin. But isn't it interesting, Pat? I mean, I'm sure you, in your travels and in your jobs as well, you find people from other countries, whether it's in our universities, the foreign exchange students, in our high schools. These are I'm such a big believer in foreign exchange programs, whether it's at high school or college level, because again, it's bringing people from other countries into our predominantly white communities, not all, but most of them in Wisconsin, and you learn something about yourself. At least we did in our family. I don't say this lightly, I'm a different person today because of that experience.
Yes, without a doubt. And my wife, she went to Reidsville High School, little community in Manitowoc County. Yep. And it was always so unique when a foreign exchange student would come, but they learned so much more, made lifelong friends. We went to go visit one in Spain.
Wow.
at one point. We mm-hmm. had a foreign exchange daughter from Russia. The ties are long lasting. And I cannot recommend enough. If you can't travel the world, then at least be open to meeting people from elsewhere around the world, starting with whatever foreign exchange student comes to your town next. Mr. Alba, this has been a far more serious discussion than I ever meant. I will not let it happen again.
All right, very good.
I appreciate it just the same, and look forward to joining you on your show in a bit, and hope you have a great day.
You as well. See you soon, Pat. Thank you.
All right, and that'll do it for us on this Wednesday. Let's see, tomorrow we will have Hometown Health with Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and then on Friday, State Representative Francesca Hong, who's on a national list of top 10 young leaders. We'll tell you about that and much more coming up this week yet on Up North News Radio. I'm Pat Kreitlaw. Have a great day.